Good afternoon and welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community. Your host is Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. This hour is designed to inspire, inform, and to help you live better with cancer. Now, here's your host, Kim Tibaldo.
Welcome to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, an internet radio show that focuses on informing and inspiring people to live well with cancer. I'm Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community. The Wellness Community and Gildas Club have joined forces to become the Cancer Support Community, the largest provider of cancer support in the United States and around the world. Our services are offered at more than 100 locations worldwide and online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. On today's show, which is being brought to you in part by Lilly Oncology and Onyx Pharmaceuticals, we are talking about colorectal cancer. In 2014, about 136,830 people were diagnosed with colorectal cancer in the United States. Colorectal cancer is the third most commonly diagnosed cancer and third leading cause of cancer-related deaths. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and to kick off the month, we've invited my friend and colleague, Michael Sapienza, from the organization Chris for Life to join us today. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Kim. Glad to be here.
Michael, you are the founder and president of Chris for Life, an organization focused on colorectal cancer. Chris for Life works to fight colorectal cancer by providing direct support resources to those diagnosed with cancer, facilitating research, and also increasing awareness. And we're going to dive in with Michael a little bit on his work and on the organization. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get started. Michael, why don't you start by telling us your personal story. Tell us your connection to cancer and to colorectal cancer specifically.
Absolutely, Kim. So for me, it started, I was a professional musician. I played the trumpet actually all over the world, in the United States and throughout Europe. And in 2006, I was actually living in Miami Beach, Florida, performing with the New World Symphony, who was actually conducted by a gentleman named Michael Tilson Thomas, who also conducts the San Francisco Symphony. And I remember that day like it was yesterday, basically. It was a Friday afternoon. We were performing Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and I think it was Yo-Yo Ma that was performing. I can't remember exactly, but somebody. And I was playing principal on both of these pieces. So it was, a little bit of a challenging evening. And I remember the next morning, my parents calling, and my mom, the first thing she said, she says, "Michael, we have a bump in the road." And I knew immediately, I could tell by the sound of her voice that something was going on. And she says, "I went in yesterday for a colonoscopy, and they found a large tumor, and they think it's late-stage colon cancer." And she said again, "Michael, this is just a bump in the road. Don't worry, Michael, it's just a bump in the road. But, to make a long story short, unfortunately, my mom passed on Mother's Day in 2009. It was May of 2009, and she was treated here in Washington, D.C. with Dr. John Marshall and got some of the best care, and unfortunately, still passed away from this disease. And our family at the time, this was in 2009, we took a look at it and we said, why isn't enough being done for colorectal cancer or colon and rectal cancer? Why aren't people paying attention? Why isn't this on the radio? Why isn't it on TV? Why aren't we seeing blue ribbons like we see pink ribbons all over the place? Why aren't we hearing about this? And my mom was actually, she was fairly upset. She was a quiet, kind of tenacious woman. And I remember she was in the hospital during March of 2009 before she died. And we were having this conversation about, this scope out race that we do in D.C. for colon cancer. And on the radio, hearing ads for the Susan G. Komen 3 Day, and which is great. I mean, we don't want to take away from that. It's awesome. But she was really hoping that we would hear something. And it kind of stuck with me. It really did, Kim. It stuck with me. And I remember maybe a month later, my brother asking me, "Michael, what do you really want to do?" I was a trumpet player. And I said, "Well, Paul, if I had $1 million, I would start a colon cancer organization." And we didn't have $1 million, unfortunately, but we founded the organization in 2010, March of that year, and really kind of the rest is history. We're now the second largest colorectal cancer advocacy organization in the country.
So Michael, let's talk a little bit about the organization. And I appreciate you sharing that story. I think it's a really powerful story. And in the time I've known you and the organization, you've done an incredible amount to raise awareness of colorectal cancer. So you founded the organization Chris for Life in 2010. So tell us, you know, how did you move from sort of that idea in your head to action? How did you think about kind of starting the organization, think about the mission, and tell us about the name?
Yeah, an interesting thing was we founded the organization at the beach with family and friends, and it was, you know, I actually invited, you know, my whole family and a couple of, you know, key friends to the beach and got real serious about it. I put together a PowerPoint presentation and binders for everybody. And, you know, I took it seriously. So it wasn't just kind of like this, oh, you know, we're going to hold one event in memory of my mom and kind of, do nothing. I really, and actually a couple of friends that I brought in, some development and some strategic folks, to talk about, you know, how can we really make a difference? And so we studied some of the other organizations that were out there, and we decided, okay, here's our three main focuses. We're going to focus on research because colorectal cancer is still vastly underfunded. We're going to focus on patient support. So similar to you guys are augmenting some of the things that you guys do, we're working on patient support. And then as well, raising awareness. So colorectal cancer is one of those cancers that is almost completely preventable. So if we can, you know, make it so people talk about it. So for example, people, you know, save the tatas or talk about breast cancer. Well, we don't really talk about colon or our butts or our stomach, or, you know, most people don't even know where their colons are. So yeah, we really decided to focus. Let's focus on these three areas: research, patient support, awareness, and prevention.
So Chris for Life is the name that you and your family and friends chose to honor your mom's legacy, but also to obviously put this kind of action plan in place by forming the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that name was also formed at the beach, but Chris obviously is my mom's name. And for life, I think, yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory, but we did have, you know, a vision statement to become a major catalyst, you know, in the fight against colorectal cancer. And the four words that we used, which we call our values, are compassion. My mom was incredibly compassion in her entire life. You know, empowerment, I think that's something that it was kind of an overused word, but I still think it's an important word to empower people. Perseverance, I've never met anybody that has persevered through as much as my mom did during her lifetime, and it's something that we felt was really important to have as a value in the organization. And then life, and once again, I think that's it's pretty self-explanatory.
And Michael, I just wanted to let folks know who are listening today, who are maybe just joining us, that it's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, and then four, the number four, and then L-I-F-E, life, if they're taking a moment to look you guys up online. And I'll ask you to share, obviously, some of that contact information throughout the show in terms of how folks can find you. Now, Michael, you talked about the focus on sort of three key areas at the organization: research, support, and awareness. And, you know, obviously, those things truly encompass many of the important, you know, aspects of the fight against colorectal cancer. Would you just take a moment, Michael, to walk us through each of those kind of three core elements of your mission and explain how they work together? We've got the research, the support, and the awareness piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So for colorectal cancer, we have about 1.2 million Americans living with the disease today. So it's vitally important that we fund research to help make this a chronic disease for those folks that unfortunately are diagnosed at a later stage, and or help them if they are, you know, in an early stage. So funding that research is incredibly important. And also that goes along with the support. So if we have 1.2 million Americans living with the disease, we obviously need to be able to support them in an X number of ways. So we have something that's called Colon Town, and we'll probably hopefully talk about it a little bit later in the show. But it's our support network, basically, your support community. And then the awareness and prevention piece, I feel like if we had this struggle when we were starting the organization, did we talk about the cure as in, you know, the research being the cure? Because, you know, Susan G. Komen, Race for the Cure, have, you know, kind of gotten this, how do I say it? Like, you know, brought the cure to people's, you know, forefront, to the top of their minds. So it's, do we talk about the cure first, or do we talk about awareness? Because for colon cancer, the awareness is so vital. You know, the statistics in this country for people getting getting screened are incredibly low. It's nationally about 55 to 65% of the at-risk population are getting screened, which, you know, unfortunately, if all the people were getting screened, we would reduce that. You know, that number you said at the beginning, around 140,000 new cases every year. So,
yeah.
We do a bunch of awareness programs, which I think we're going to talk about later as well.
Definitely. Yeah, we're going to drill down. I think a lot of folks listening to the show or maybe who are just joining us now, I think we've got a lot of questions here, Michael, about, we're going to get into what are the screening guidelines, you know, when should someone get screened, you know, what are some of the risk factors and things like that. So for folks who are listening, please know, you know, we've got some time with Michael and we're going to dive in on all of these pieces. But Michael, if I have somebody listening right now who maybe was just diagnosed with colorectal cancer, or someone in their family was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. Before we go to our break here in a couple of minutes, can you just outline the services that you provide to patients and families and maybe let our listeners know how they can find you?
Sure, absolutely. Well, to find us, it's chris4life.org, so chris, the number 4life.org. And I would say some of the most important services that we offer are, when you're newly diagnosed, we have something called a wellness guide. So it gives you information about all the different treatment options, different insurance questions that you may have, all those sorts of things. And it's available on our website, and you can also request one, actual physical copy. And then in addition to that, we've created a DVD specifically about colorectal cancer. So it's doctors, nurses, a social worker, patients and survivors talking about all the different parts of your diagnosis and you know, post-surgery, post-chemo, all the different things, you know, psychosocial things that might come up. And then in addition to that, we have monthly webinars that we do that educate individuals on any host of issues. For example, in March, we do something about liver-directed therapies. Sometimes stage 4 patients have what we call metastases, or the cancer has spread to their liver. So we do one of those educational things every single month.
And then, Michael, just before we go to our break here, we've got about a half a minute, just tell folks what the website is. Is there an 800 number? You know, what's the best way for folks to access some of these great resources that you've described?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website, again, is www.chrisforlife.org. And we do have a call-in number, which is, and I'm trying to find it, Kim.
Why don't you add it
in front of me.
I know. Well, no worries. Why don't you? Yeah, put your hands on, and we'll make sure we have some time throughout the show to share that number with folks if they want. We know some folks still love to just pick up the phone and connect with somebody. But again,
yeah,
the website
absolutely is
www.chrisforlife.org, and it's C-H-R-I-S, and then the number 4, and life, L-I-F-E. We're going to take a quick break here. This is Frankly Speaking about Cancer. It is March. It is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. We are talking to Michael Sapienza, who is the founder and president of Chris for Life, which is named in memory and in honor of his mother, who passed away in 2009 from colorectal cancer. Don't go away. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope. And help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you, a breakaway from cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help, but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit MealTrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB, or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. Today's show is sponsored in part by Amgen Oncology and Bristol-Myers Squibb. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and to kick off the month, we're dedicating today's show to discussing a cancer that is the third most commonly diagnosed among men and women combined, colorectal cancer. I'm here with Michael Sapienza. He's the founder and president of CRISP for Life, an organization focused on fighting colorectal cancer. Michael, I appreciate in our earlier conversation the overview of the organization, and you know, I think it's so important for folks listening to find these wonderful resources that are dedicated to supporting people with colorectal cancer and their families. I want to start this segment off by talking more about colorectal cancer itself, so that our listeners have a good idea of a sort of an understanding of this diagnosis of colorectal cancer. As you said, colon and rectal cancer. Can you just give us some top line? Tell us a little bit more about the disease.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like you said, Kim, colorectal cancer is actually the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths for both men and women, unfortunately, because it is the third for, you know, separately, but for men and women, it's the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths. And unfortunately, you know, similar to like pancreatic cancer or some other cancers where there aren't very many symptoms, it's kind of the same for colon. But normally, you know, you're diagnosed and you go through some sort of surgery to remove that portion of your colon that has a tumor, and then you may follow up with chemotherapy or radiation, depending on whether it's colon or rectal. We've actually seen a decrease in the incidence of colon cancer in those over 50. So we've seen about a 1-2% decrease over the last 10 years, so about a 20 to 30% decrease over the last 10 years for those over 50. But unfortunately, in our younger population, those under 50, we've seen about a 2-3% increase, which is, you know, rather unfortunate, especially between those 35 and 45. So we're really, really trying to increase our awareness, and we're part of a coalition called the Never Too Young for Colorectal Cancer Coalition. And then it's going to be focusing on some research and ways that we may be able to, you know, bring awareness to, you know, primary care physicians, because, you know, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard about patients and or from caregivers that say, you know, I went into my doctor when I was 30 and I had symptoms and symptoms, you know, and then they kind of turned me away. And unfortunately, when they went back, it was stage four.
So what do you tell, you know, so what do you tell people, Michael, you know, in that instance, or what do you tell people who just feel like there's something wrong, but because they don't, you know, kind of meet the general criteria? We know that cancer is statistically a disease of an aging population. So somebody, they're having some symptoms or they feel like something's not right. They go in, their doctor turns them away. Then what do you do?
Being your own advocate is the most important thing, and it, you know, we talked about that word empowerment again, you know, earlier. But you have to be your own advocate, and you have to be educated. And I think, you know, unfortunately, primary care physicians are busy, and they have so many things that they're trying to help patients with. And so, I think the first thing that they think is not colon cancer, which, because in the majority of cases, it's probably not. So,
right.
You know, we don't want to scare people just because if they have rectal bleeding, or if they have cramping, or if they have night sweats, it doesn't mean that they have colon cancer. But I do think that if it continues, if those symptoms, you know, persist, that, you know, we have to educate both the primary care physicians and individuals, you know, that this could be, it could potentially be something, even if it is a polyp that's causing bleeding or an ulcer or something like that. I really think, you know, that being your own advocate and telling your doctor, no, this is what I want to do. Don't send me home with Metamucil because, you know, this may be something serious.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important that folks do know that, and they should really trust their, you know, trust their instincts, and if they're having the symptoms, they do really need to push and be their own best advocates, because we hear the scenario you're describing across all cancers, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody was having this, having an issue, they were young, they didn't quite fit into the, you know, to the demographic or the risk group, and unfortunately, you know, found out, you know, perhaps in months or even years later that it was something more serious. So I think you're right, folks need to listen to their bodies, they need to listen to that instinct, and you know, really push for their own care. I know, Michael, that, you know, there's so much conversation and so many changes when it comes to different cancer screening guidelines, and, you know, we've talked on this show about breast cancer, about prostate cancer, about cervical cancer, and many different changes in the screening guidelines. Bring us up to speed on what the current screening guidelines are for colon cancer, if you're colorectal cancer, if you're a regular healthy person, or if there are other risk factors or family factors that people should know about.
Sure, absolutely. So for the average risk individual, it's age 50. So you should start going in for your screening at age 50. If you've had a family history, it's age 40, or if your relative or 10 years prior to your first degree relative. So for example, if your mom or your grandmother or grandfather had it at age 30, you need to be going in at age 20.
Wow.
And then we also recommend that African Americans go in at age 45. So those are the basic kind of what we say in the recommended age for screening.
So, Michael, if you say you're at like regular risk or average risk, define that. What does that mean?
So it basically means anybody, even if you have a comorbidity, so even if you have diabetes, or if you've had something, even if you've had another cancer, as long as you have not had colorectal cancer in your family history, then age 50 is still the recommendation.
It's still the recommendation.
Yeah, so as long as it's a first-degree relative has not had colorectal cancer. Now, you know, granted, we talked about the young people and there being an increase in the diagnosis for under 50. So, you know, I think, once again, being your own advocate and knowing what your body is telling you. So if you do have rectal bleeding, if you do have cramping, if you have major changes in your stool, or if you have weight loss, those are things that if you are under 50, you know, that you need to be paying attention to, and, you know, consult your doctor and talk to them. And you know, if it persists, I would definitely, you know, advocate for a screening.
For a screening, meaning a colonoscopy.
Yeah. So this is something, Kim, that I think we should talk about.
So, yeah,
let's do it. In terms of, you know, the different types of screening, there are, you know, numerous guidelines and numerous types of screening. And unfortunately for colon cancer, I think that's something that's working against us in a little bit of getting
mm-hmm.
more people screened. So
yes.
For breast cancer, it's mammogram at 40, period, mm-hmm. with a judge's hammer, you got it down. You know, for colon cancer, we have colonoscopy, endoscopy, FIT, FOBT, and we have virtual colonoscopy, and then now we have something called Cologuard. So we have a bunch of different tests, and the guidelines are a little bit confusing, and I think that's something that is unfortunately contributing to people not being screened. And, you know, I understand why we're doing it. We want to make the colonoscopy a little bit more accessible. Some people are afraid of it. Some people don't want something stuck up their butt. Excuse my,
mm-hmm.
you know, my
mm-hmm.
French, but
yeah.
But it's true. It is, I think, for some populations, a barrier to get screening. So there are other tests. One is called the FIT. It's FIT or FOBT. Those are stool sample tests. And then now there's a take-home stool sample test just approved by the FDA called Cologuard. And then the colonoscopy is still the gold standard, because if you get any of those other tests, you're still going to have to go back and have a colonoscopy to find out if there's a polyp. So the way that we prevent colon cancer from happening is by screening. So say, for example, you go in, you get your colonoscopy, and the scope sees a polyp. What that scope will do right then and there, it will snip out that polyp, take it out, and prevent that polyp from growing into a cancer. So it's such a preventable disease. And so, you know, one of the things we're trying to do, Kim, is to make these guidelines more clear and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and make it more easy and more accessible for the general public to have these screenings.
So why is it so you're saying that they can go in, do the colonoscopy, and remove a polyp. That polyp could have potentially turned into cancer, And that basically we're preventing or curing, or that with this cancer we have an incredible opportunity to catch it early, to prevent it from happening, or to cure it.
Yeah, absolutely. So my mom was 56 when she first went in for her first colonoscopy. It was too late. She had already late stage colon cancer, stage 4 colon cancer, and it had, you know, to her lymph nodes and then to other places. And if she had gone in when she was 50, like recommended,
right,
you know, most likely she would have been cured from this disease, and it probably never would have happened in the first place.
Mm. And because your mom died of colorectal cancer, does that automatically put you at a higher risk or require that you go and get screened?
Yes. I've actually been screened already, Kim, and I went just because I talk about it all the time.
Yes.
So I did have a colonoscopy. I had a colonoscopy at age 34, which is, you know, it's before the, you know, the screening guidelines. But I did it because I talk about it almost every day.
Right.
And I actually did have two precancerous polyps, and they both were removed. So I actually have to go back every 3 years now. And so that's a really important thing, is that sometimes people will go at 50 and then, you know, they go right at 50, or they go right when they're supposed to go, but then they don't go in the correct intervals. And so it's really important that if you've done your screening, whether it's a FIT test, a take-home test, or if you've done a colonoscopy or something, that you ask your doctor, when do I need to come back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very easy in this, I don't want to say, you know, factory kind of setting where you have, you know, colonoscopy after colonoscopy, for the doctors not to follow up and say, okay, you need to come back in 3 years, or you need to come back in 5 years, or you need to come back in 10. It's really important that you kind of then follow up with when your next screening is going to be.
And you really, as the consumer, need to take responsibility for getting that information, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I can tell right now a little bit about those kind of guidelines, because I think that is important. So if you go with
So Michael, we're coming up on a quick break here, and I don't want to shortchange that that conversation. So let me ask you one other quick question before we get to our break here, and then we can get into those guidelines for folks, because I want that to be, you know, really crystal clear, and I want to make sure folks are getting this information. So I just want to ask you, so because your mother died from colorectal cancer, does that automatically put you at risk for colorectal cancer?
Yes, Kim, it does. Yep.
Okay. So I think that's important for, you know, for people to know, because I think a lot of folks sort of ask that question. I have someone, you know, in my family, particularly like that, a parent, a first degree relative, you know, what am I supposed to do? Does that put me at risk? Am I supposed to go now and get screened? But really, if that is the case, you really need to go and talk to your doctor and, you know, and talk about getting screened for the disease and really understand what those screening guidelines are for you. So I think that that's really important for folks to know and to understand. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and we are shedding light on the issue around screening, around diagnosis, around treatment, and around many of the wonderful resources that are out there for people with colorectal cancer and for their family members and loved ones. We're talking to Michael Sapienza, who's the founder and president of Chris for Life, an organization focused on colorectal cancer. And that's Chris, the number 4, Life. If you want to check out the website, chrisforlife.org, take a look at that. We're just going to take a quick break here. We have a lot more to cover on the show, so don't go away. We will be right back.
Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Magnolia Meals at Home, a new pilot program that aims to help patients by providing nourishing meals to households affected by breast cancer so loved ones can spend more quality time together. This program is currently available in and around 2 pilot cities, Andover, Massachusetts, and Woodcliffe Lake, New Jersey. Participants will receive 1 delivery of meals every month for up to 6 months when enrolled in the program. Each delivery includes up to 7 meals designed to help meet the nutritional needs of people living with breast cancer and 10 meals for family members. This novel program is brought to you by the AZI Women's Oncology Program, Magnolia. Cancer Care, the Cancer Support Community, and Meals on Wheels Association of America. To find out if you or loved ones are eligible, visit online at www.magnoliameals.com. Or call 617-733-5848.
Effective cancer treatment requires more than just medication or surgery. For the country's 12 million cancer survivors and their loved ones, the social and emotional challenges of adapting to life with cancer are ongoing. How to handle coworkers' questions, how to get comfortable with new physical realities, how to reassure worried family members, or explain to friends your priorities have changed. The Cancer Support Community is ready to help by providing free counseling, education, and hope for survivors and their caregivers. Whether online or at over 100 locations around the world, the Cancer Support Community is ready to offer the support you need to live a better life with cancer. For more information on support groups, publications, nutrition, exercise programs, and more, call 1-888-793-9355 or visit us online at www.cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org. The Cancer Support Community, a global network of education and hope.
Cancer. It's a lonely word. Terms I don't understand. Choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The Cancer Support Community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer, sponsored in part today by Takeda Oncology. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo, from the Cancer Support Community. Today we are joined by my friend and colleague, Michael Sapienza, who is the founder and president of CRIS for Life. We've been learning about the organization. We've been learning more about colorectal cancer. Michael, I know before we jump to our last break here, we were really talking about the screening guidelines. Let's just back up for a minute for folks who may just be joining the conversation. Your otherwise healthy person, no history of colorectal cancer in your family. When are you supposed to get screened?
At age 50.
At age 50. Okay. So then, so I'm fine. It's clear. They find nothing. When am I supposed to get screened again? Tell us a little bit about if they don't find something, if they find a polyp, you know, what are the guidelines based on what they find through the screening?
Sure, absolutely. So if they find a polyp through a colonoscopy, it's every 10 years. But if you're having a FIT, or FOBT, which is a take-home stool test, you need to be doing one of those every single year. Mm. So it's very important to know the distinction. So if you're doing an at-home test, that is, a fecal test, that's every year. If you're doing a colonoscopy and they find no polyps, you are good for 10 years. If they find polyps, depending on, you know, a couple different things, it's between every 3 and 5 years. So you need to be consulting your doctor and making sure to ask those questions once you have your first screening.
Okay, so just make sure, folks, if you're listening, that you're really crystal clear, you're discussing the results with your doctor, and you're crystal clear on when you need to go back again, because I think that that's important information. And, Michael, you know, you've been sharing with us how you lost your mother to colorectal cancer and founded CRIS for Life in her memory and her honor, and, you know, that puts you at a higher risk for colorectal cancer. So I think it's important that folks know that as well. Let me just ask you a quick question on the screenings, Michael. Uh-huh. Are you finding in general that insurance companies are good about paying for these screenings? Is Medicare good about paying for the screenings? You know, what do we know about accessibility, and is that sort of impacting screening rates?
Yeah, so the Affordable Care Act has actually caused us to now cover, finally. So there are basically any screening colonoscopy is covered. So it's a wonderful thing. And obviously that means Medicare is covering it, and that has to be according to the guidelines. So, you know, if I go in at 25 or 35 or something and I say I want a colonoscopy, it's obviously not going to be covered. But the problem is that if you go in to get a screening colonoscopy and they find a polyp, mm-hmm. and they take out those polyps. Unfortunately, that is not covered under Medicare. And so that's one of the things that we and other colorectal cancer advocacy organizations like Colorectal Cancer and Colon Cancer Alliance are fighting for on the Hill to get that to be covered. Because for, you know, somebody that is 65 years of age that's in the Medicare population, you know, it's not only a barrier to get them screened, but it's also a financial barrier as well. So mm-hmm. they go thinking, oh, it's going to be no cost, and then they have four polyps removed. It could be, you know, about $300 a polyp. That's a lot of money to have a bill at the end. So, you know, in general, they are screenings are covered, but unfortunately, there's still some loopholes that we are trying to work around.
Okay, great. And folks can learn on your website about some of those efforts and some of those advocacy opportunities if they want to fight that fight with you.
Yes, absolutely. ChristopherLife.org.
Great. Excellent. Excellent. So, Michael, I know that obviously this awareness piece that we're talking about is huge. And we know that, you know, as you said earlier in the show, a lot of people are kind of embarrassed to talk about these things or bring up these, you know, concerns with the colorectal region. They don't want to talk about rectal bleeding. They don't want to talk about their colon. They don't want to talk about those things. And you guys have done some really kind of bold and creative things to kind of raise awareness and help people laugh a little bit and maybe overcome some of that embarrassment or anxiety. I know you had a campaign called Love Your Butt. So tell us about that and tell us about other awareness efforts that you guys have going on to help folks get over this hump.
Absolutely. You know, what's funny, Kim, is that, like, I think about, like, my mom and what she would think of the Love Your Butt campaign. When you were saying that, I was just, for the first time, I actually thought what my mom would think about this Love Your Butt campaign. She'd probably be hiding under the kitchen table, you know. That's okay. Yeah, we've talked about this a lot, but, you know, it's important for people to at the dinner table or at Thanksgiving or at Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever it is, family gatherings, to be talking about colon cancer. You know, I think that women now talk about their breasts and they talk about their breast health, and I think very much so because we've had a lot of awareness placed around, that issue. And for colon cancer, I think to know that more people die from colorectal cancer in a year than from breast cancer, mm-hmm. you know, people would say, no way, that can't be. There, you know, breast cancer, a lot of people are dying. Unfortunately, more people are dying from colon cancer. And
yeah.
So, you know, I think that one of the main things when I started this organization that I really wanted to focus on was making this not a taboo subject.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting some smart people around the table of how can we do that? How can we get people talking about it? And so in 2013, we launched, like you said, the Love Your Butt campaign. And the goal was to just get people laughing and to, you know, kind of getting over this kind of like taboo nature of your colon or your colonoscopy or your butt or, you know, getting it screened. And over the course of the last 2 years, we've made some significant progress in this campaign. We've moved from 2 cities, and this year we'll be in 16 cities plus online. And what we do is, you know, I encourage people to check out loveyourbutt.org. It actually launched on March 1st. So we film a video that goes kind of viral all over the country and on TV and et cetera, has been featured on CNN and NPR. And really what it does is it encourages people to get screened, to talk about their butt, and then they can go to this website and they get information about screening guidelines, et cetera. It's all over the subway and the metro, you know, depending on where you live in New York and D.C. Last year it was in Times Square all over. And this year we're actually going to be doing a social media campaign, and I don't want to spoil it, so I just encourage everybody to go to loveyourbutt.org and check it out. But you know, really what the main goal is to get more people screened.
Great. Fantastic. I know you mentioned, Michael, earlier in the show something called Colon Town. Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a support community. It's called Colon Town. And I know, Kim, you guys have been incredibly supportive of this community through your centers all across the United States and getting the word out about Colon Town.
Yep.
Erica Brown, who is a 12-year colon cancer survivor, when she first started, she didn't have any place to really go for support. And I think she, you know, thought, okay, I want to create something online that could potentially bring in people. And so we actually have a map of the colon. It's called colon. You can actually see it at colontown.org. And it's, we have a community center where patients, survivors, and caregivers can talk and et cetera. There's Rectalberg, where patients that have rectal cancer, because there's specific issues to rectal cancer that are different from colon cancer. And then there's a patient for, a community for stage four patients, and that's called Four Corners. And so it's basically just a support community, and it's right now housed on Facebook, and we have, I think, around 5,000 people on this nationwide, and just, you know, talking and supporting each other. And, you know, it's really just a wonderful, addition for anybody looking for some type of online support.
Terrific, terrific resource. Michael, tell us about what else, you know, we're in the beginning of March now. What else does 2015 have in store for Chris for Life? Maybe remind folks of the website if there are other ways that folks can learn more about what you're doing, join some of these efforts, get engaged. Just talk about what 2015 holds for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we haven't really talked about the research, as much. And maybe we can just talk about that a little bit.
Do it. Let's do it. That sounds great. Yep.
So when my mom was diagnosed in 2006, there had just been a couple new drugs approved for colon cancer. But really, prior to 2006, from 1975 to 2006, there was only one drug cocktail. Let's call it a cocktail because it involves a couple different chemotherapies, but called 5-FU. And that was it. There was little to no progress. And, you know, then in 2006, there was about two drugs that came out. And then about a year and a half ago, there was two other drugs. And so we're making some small progress in terms of turning, colorectal cancer, at least stage four colon cancer, into, you know, chronic illness. But we still have a ton of ground to cover. So only about 10% of stage four patients are living 5 years or longer. And so, I encourage people to invest in research and to fund research because, you know, like I mentioned, about 40% of all of those diagnosed in 1 year will be stage four. And so we really need to be doing that. And one of the things that, Kim, that we're doing is we're creating this clinical trial database. So I don't know how much you want me to get into this. I don't want to get into, you know, too much technical detail, but it's really a place for patients to go to learn about new treatments, new treatments for colon cancer.
Mm-hmm. And we've got just a minute or so here until our next break, Michael. But I do think it's important for folks to know that there are many clinical trials out there, and that if they should be diagnosed with colorectal cancer, really, you know, one of the questions they should be asking their doctor is, might there be a clinical trial that's out there and that's right for me? And I know one of the misconceptions, Michael, that people hold about clinical trials is they think there's always a placebo in a clinical trial. And in fact, you know, in the vast majority of cancer treatment trials, that is not the case, that you're likely going to be getting either the standard of care or the standard of care plus, whatever the new agent is that's being investigated. And so I do think it's important that we do raise awareness about clinical trials. And I love hearing that you guys are creating a database that's specifically dedicated to colorectal cancer clinical trials. When's that going to launch, Michael?
It'll launch in May of this year, and we're doing this with a company called Smart Patients, just so you know, Kim. And we'll be creating an educational video at the beginning of this clinical trial database to do exactly what you just said. You know, make sure patients and caregivers are, you know, understand how this works.
Great. It's excellent, Michael, and we want to support you in getting the word out, because really it's through those trials that we're going to get the next new treatment, the next innovation, and through those trials that we're going to get to better cures. And so we want to keep track of that initiative with you and help to promote that when it becomes available. We're going to take just a quick break here. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. We're talking about Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month with Michael Sapienza from Chris for Life. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Cancer, it's a lonely word.
terms I don't understand, choices I never thought I'd have to make. But there is hope and help.
Support from cancer survivors.
Links to research and clinical trials.
Help with finances and access to care.
All behind you at Breakaway from Cancer, created by Amgen to empower cancer patients.
The cancer support community is proud to be a partner of Breakaway from Cancer.
Hi, I'm Nick Nicolaides, President and CEO of Morphotech, and we're delighted to be a sponsor of Cancer Support Community's Frankly Speaking About Cancer series. Morphotech and its parent company, Eisai, are committed to human healthcare, and we recognize that patients and their families are the most important participants in the healthcare process. We salute our global advocacy partners who are devoted to improving the lives of people touched by cancer every day.
People living with breast cancer often find it difficult to ask for help, and many of the people in their lives want to help, but don't know how. During National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Cancer Support Community is proud to support Meal Train, sponsored by Magnolia, which utilizes MealTrain.com, a free shared online calendar, to streamline the process of giving and receiving meals for families coping with breast cancer. Help us reach our goal of 1,000 new breast cancer-specific meal trains this October. To learn more, visit mealtrain.com/MMT and enter the code MAGNOLIAB or visit us at cancersupportcommunity.org.
You're listening to Frankly Speaking About Cancer with the Cancer Support Community, an inspirational program offering the resources you need to live a better life with cancer. Now here's your host, Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support
Welcome
Community.
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm your host, Kim Tibaldo. We've been having a great discussion today with Michael Sapienza, founder and president of Chris for Life. We're talking about colorectal cancer, second leading cause of death of all cancers. Does the disease, Michael, affect men and women equally or close to equally?
Yes. Unfortunately, it's one of the big taboos, Kim, is that it's an old white man's disease. Unfortunately, it's pretty much equal between men and women.
Right. And then you talked about a higher risk in the African-American community?
Yes. Yeah, that's about three times as likely to get colorectal cancer than some of their Caucasian counterparts.
And what do we know about the reason for that?
Unfortunately, we don't. There's not mm-hmm. hasn't been too many epidemiology studies about that. I know we actually funded a study last year to find this out, but the results haven't been made public yet. So we're hoping to know that. You know, obviously we can all guess that access to certain types of foods or it's a guess at this point, really.
Yeah. Michael, let's just take another minute to talk about the research and the progress that we're making. We ended the last segment talking about, the much wider array of treatment choices and options that are available to patients today than when your mom was diagnosed. Are we seeing, are these treatments more effective? Are we seeing fewer side effects with these treatments? Are we, what are the benefits that we're seeing?
Yeah, some of the most exciting things that I'm seeing, and I was just up in Mount Sinai in New York City and learning about, whereas 20 years ago or even 10 years ago when my mom was diagnosed, Kim, you've probably heard Dr. Marshall say this, we had the carpet bomber approach. So
yeah.
We basically gave everybody the same thing. So we took a B-52 bomber and we just shot it at everything possible. And what's really exciting to me is we've kind of been talking about personalized or precision medicine, so really individualizing a person's treatment. We've been talking about it for like 5 years, I think now. But it seems like now we're actually kind of starting to do it, which is really, really exciting. So I was up in Mount Sinai learning about this genetic stuff that they're doing and really kind of honing in on, what are the mutations in your DNA? What's different about your protein? And then how can we fight those specific mutations or differences with the drugs that may already be available to us, but they may not be available or FDA approved for colon cancer. So it may be approved for melanoma or maybe approved for even outside of cancer. And that's what's really exciting to me. And I think, patients especially need to be, more and more educated and understand, what kind of mutations do they have? It's not going to be like when my mom was diagnosed where it's just one size fits all. for colon cancer. So I think for me, you know, that's the thing that's really exciting, you know, is this personalized medicine and moving towards treating the patient, not just the disease. So I would say that's probably the most exciting
stuff. And what about, and Michael, is there a gene or is there a genetic screening or, you know, do we know about any kind of genetic profile or genetic mutation related to colon cancer?
Yeah, there are, but unfortunately some of those are still, you know, in clinical trials, like to say, okay, you can have a blood test and that will determine if you have, you know, you're predisposed to potentially having colon cancer. And unfortunately, nothing is really approved yet, per se. There is a couple hereditary colorectal cancers. One is called the Lynch syndrome. Another is FAP. And those, you know, are, you know, you are unfortunately are, you know, predisposed to that genetically. And, you know, most people would know by their, you know, 20s or 30s if they have this disease, and then their kids would need to get screened. But we do have information on our site about those as well.
And how would people even know to get tested for those?
Unfortunately, they don't, unless a family member has had it. That's the problem. Unfortunately, they don't. And there's not a high enough percentage of the overall colon cancer population that have these types of hereditary colon cancers to require that, you know, the entire United States population or the entire world population be screened for that. So,
and if you had a first degree relative who had colorectal cancer, would they test you for those genes?
It would depend. It would depend. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different things. My recommendation, just not get into too much detail, would be to go to the ChrisForLife.org site, and we have something on there about family history through a company called Myriad that helps people would understand that. Yeah.
Great. Excellent advice. Michael, we're unfortunately getting close to the end of our show. This has been such a great conversation. I think that I certainly know I've learned a great deal, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. But as we move to the end of the show, Michael, can you just talk a little bit about some tips or advice for someone who's just been diagnosed with colorectal cancer? You've been diagnosed, maybe someone in your family has been diagnosed. Just some, you know, maybe a couple quick tips that folks can note down if they're listening today.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I would say about that. You know, and this is just from my personal experience. I think everybody's different, and I'm sure Kim, you feel the same way. But for me, it's that, you know, when my mom was going through this, and now seeing obviously thousands of people go through it, you know, I tell people, I said, you know, if you're having a good day, that's wonderful. If you're having a bad day, it's okay too. And it's okay to be sad. And I think to let yourself, you know, understand that, you know, there is tomorrow. And I think sometimes patients forget to live because they're so worried about that. And I know that for my mom, you know, she celebrated in the fact that she could come down to Miami Beach and hear me perform, or that she could travel to New York City and, you know, see my brother, or go to North Carolina and bake cookies for Christmas. And yes, you know, you could still have maybe a glass of wine if that's what, you know, you enjoy. I think those things are really, really important. And then I think the last thing I would say is that, you know, I think in our culture, you know, today, it's hard because we have so many people, as you know, Kim, in this country that are diagnosed with cancer in general.
Yeah.
And I feel like people think it's important and it's a worthy cause, but I think at some point we all have to take ownership of this and really make it, you know, bring it to the forefront. So, you know, those would be the things that I would say.
Yeah, I think all good input and advice. Again, I want to let folks know, if you're listening today, to check out the website, Chris for Life. It's CHRIS and then the number 4 and then the word life.org, to learn about all of the great resources that we've discussed today, all of the great information that we've reviewed. You can learn about the organization's investment in research. You can learn about their support resources for patients and families, and learn about their effort to raise awareness of colorectal cancer and make sure that folks are screened appropriately and are getting the information and the resources and the support that they need. It's been a pleasure, Michael, having you on the show today and sharing your insight and sharing this great information. If you're listening today and you have an idea for an episode of our show, Frankly Speaking, about cancer, we invite you to share with us any topics you'd like to hear more about. Some of you have sent us some great ideas, and we've gone out to find some terrific guests on a host of topics. You can email us at news@cancersupportcommunity.org, or you can also reach out through our Facebook page, through social media, and let us know of ideas and suggested guests that you have for the show. I just want to remind folks that the Cancer Support Community provides a multitude of in-person, online, and over-the-phone support services for people with colorectal cancer and with all cancers at any stage of disease, and also for the family members and loved ones of people with cancer. We have 50 beautiful centers around the country where we provide support groups, education, nutrition, exercise, stress reduction. So visit our website at cancersupportcommunity.org to find a location near you. You can also call our toll-free helpline, which is staffed by a great team of trained counselors. The phone number for the helpline is 888-793-9355. Again, if you're grabbing a pen, 888-793-9355. You can call that toll-free line and talk to one of our licensed counselors Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Frankly Speaking About Cancer. I'm Kim Thibodeau. Thank you for joining us today. And until next time, be well, do well, live well.
Thank you for joining us for Frankly Speaking About Cancer with your host, Kim Thibodeau. We're here for you every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. In the meantime, stay connected online at cancersupportcommunity.org. That's cancersupportcommunity.org.